Hey, everybody. It's Tony Giuliano, your host of the No Code Podcast. Welcome to Season 1, Episode 9. This one's going to be a little different. This is an episode we're going to call Ask the Host. I had a chance to sit down with three awesome college students, Parker Strong and Catherine Rowe from Temple University, and Kaylee McGrath from Drexel. Already, these three are far more prepared for the working world than I was when I was coming out of Villanova back in 2004. But hopefully I was able to impart some wisdom and knowledge on these young people as they enter their careers when they graduate this May in 2021. Hope you enjoy the show. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Season 1, Episode 9 of the No Code Podcast. We have a special episode today. This is a little deviation from what I've done so far, which is mainly just me and one guest kind of going back and forth on life and career topics. Today, we have what I'll call Ask the Host, a special episode with three college students that I've been lucky enough to meet over the past couple of weeks. So, I'll try to impart some knowledge here on some of the younger listeners out there, since I'm getting to be an old man now and all just washed up and pathetic in my old age. So hopefully I have some good lessons for the younger kids out there. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce Catherine Rowe, Parker Strong, and Kaylee McDermott. So welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tony.
Did I just call you Kaylee McDermott?
Yes, you did.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and correct that right now. We'll call you by your real name, which is Kaylee McGrath.
Thank you very much. Hi.
And I'm not going to edit this out because I want people to know that I was a dummy and mispronounced. Not even mispronounced, just gave you a different name altogether.
It's so. Okay. It's okay.
Yeah. So you're Kaylee McGrath. So welcome.
Thank you.
All right. So let's just start off with some intros here. And why don't we go ahead and Kaylee, have you introduce yourself and a little bit of background on what it is, where you go to school, what you're majoring in, what you kind of do separate of just going to class.
Yeah, of course. So my name is Kaylee McGrath. I am a senior at Drexel University. I am currently a marketing major and I want to go into digital marketing one day. So that's kind of my field. At Comcast, it was my second co-op, and I've been lucky enough to continue there part-time since COVID-19 began. And there I do some internal marketing for them and some other, like, big, you know, finance stuff occasionally. And then outside of work, I also work for an organization called Nat Philadelphia, which I'm very passionate about. And then I also am a big painter, artist, and I love the Sixers, big fan. So yeah.
Awesome. You excited about their upcoming year with Doc Rivers and getting some of the young talent back together?
I'm very excited. I was excited last season, but I think Doc Rivers is a great choice. I've been waiting for them to make some changes in the coaching staff for a while, so hopeful.
That's awesome. Well, I'm looking forward to it as well. And JLL was lucky enough to oversee the project at the Wells Fargo Center on the renovation of the building, which got put on pause during COVID. We're hoping that comes back sometime soon. But we had done a majority of the work anyway that people will see, including the upstairs where they have that kind of social hangout where they turn the upper level suites into more of like an open bar area. So
yeah, that's awesome.
It's going to be cool. Okay. Why don't we go over to Catherine Rowe? Catherine, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. My name is Catherine Rowe and I go to Temple University. I'm a senior management information systems major. I'm also pursuing a minor in accounting. Other than school related things, it is kind of school related, but I am the director of public relations for my student professional organization called the Association for Information Systems. So I run their PR team and make graphics and such. And kind of through that, I am also the director of social media for NAP as well. So I work with Kaylee. NAP is the National Association for Asian American Professionals. And I'm also super passionate about this organization. And it has helped me grow as a person through my career and just in general as well. I had an internship this past summer with Chubb in their IT audit department, and I was also fortunate enough to work until October, which is unusual, but I'm really thankful for that experience, and I'm super happy to be here on this podcast today.
Oh, great. Thanks so much for joining. Really appreciate it. Sounds like you've got a great background already going into your, you know, postgraduate life, and, you know, certainly landing with Chubb, they're a great organization. I know Jen Starbuck over there who runs their real estate. She's a fantastic person. So if you ever come across her, make sure you tell her that Tony says hi, and connect with her if you can. She's a really great mentor to young people. Actually, she worked pretty extensively with our analyst team, which I'm going to talk about a little bit later, as I think it pertains to, you know, how you guys are going to be coming out of school and launching into the professional world. So great to have you on today.
Thanks.
Awesome. Last but not least, Mr. Parker Strong, which I really like your name, by the way. It's like, it's an interesting and very robust name. So
thank you. I get solid. I get a lot of times people say it's like a superhero name. probably because Peter Parker. I think that's what does it. But thank you, Tony. I'm super excited to be here. Like everyone else, I'm a senior. I'm at Temple University, graduating this June, and I'm studying marketing in the business school. And in school, I've been fortunate enough to serve on the management team these past 2 years of the professional sales organization. So that's a student-ran organization where we basically learn all about sales and professional development. And so we meet twice a week. We have about, I want to say, like 70 DuPay members, which is awesome. We bring in speakers every Wednesday from companies such as like Samsung, Oracle, or IBM, that salespeople come in, talk about their experiences through college and in the sales world. I've also been fortunate enough through that organization to compete in a few different sales competitions through the years. I've also through that organization, I really credit them for the opportunities I've gotten internship wise. So looking back at sophomore year, I was able to have a spring internship during my spring semester with Complete Document Solutions as a sales intern. So really got to experience what a true like sales job looks like. And then since then, that led into opportunities with Kronos, which is now UKG. They merged recently with Ultimate Software back in, I want to say, like January or February of this year. But back in the summer of 2019, I got to work on a great team as a product manager intern, which was a totally different experience compared to sales. Because it was my sophomore year, I was lucky enough to get that true like office experience, like 9-to-5, 10-week internship program, which super thankful for. And that's led into a great opportunity with the global partner enablement team. So I've been working on that team for about a year and a half now, and that's going to probably continue until I start my full-time job after school. So like I said, super excited to be here, and I'm excited for this.
Great. Yeah. Great to have you. It sounds like you're in a field that, one of my really good friends, Brent Bateman, is in, and he's with Snowflake now. He came over, just before, I guess about a year before their IPO. And, you know, certainly that world of sales and where sales and technology connect are, you know, that's a really, really interesting and lucrative field. So hopefully, you know, you're setting yourself up on a good track there.
Yeah. Thank you.
Awesome. All right. So before we get into the questions, I just wanted to talk with you guys real quick on, you know, what student life has been like during COVID. You know, Catherine and Parker, I met you guys out at the NAP event at the Navy Yard. I guess it was last month, to deliver lunch to some of the medical hospitals and facilities around the area. Kaylee, I'm not sure if you were at that one or not.
I don't know. Sorry.
Okay. No, it's all good. So, you know, we talked back then about how Temple started as in person and then quickly had to go virtual. And I think you guys have been virtual the whole time, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So what has that been like in terms of the adjustment initially, and then, you know, have you settled into the flow of all your classes being online? And I know it threw off some living situations as well for people. So just tell me a little bit about that, if you don't mind. And Catherine, you can start.
Sure. I would say my virtual experience is kind of, it's not terrible. I don't leave my apartment a lot, obviously, because I still live on campus, but the campus is closed. And but I am able to do my work in my room. And so, like, I have a lot more focus, I think. I do miss the in-person feel and just seeing my friends on campus and being able to walk to class together or maybe grab a bite. I tend to do a lot more home cooking now just because it's not as fun, I guess, to go out on campus and not see anyone. I did like the in-person feel in the beginning, but it was also strange because of the whole masks and the professors wearing a shield, and it just wasn't the same. So I think next semester we're doing a little bit of hybrid. I'm not 100% sure, but my classes will be mostly virtual. So I'm just in the same routine now. So yeah.
Yeah, I mean, certainly a huge adjustment that, I mean, I certainly can't relate to that in any way. I mean, the best I could relate to is when we went back to our offices in late May through early July and opening all five of our offices around the area and having different standards. You know, I oversee our teams in three different states, Delaware, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. And all three states had slightly different rules on occupancy percentage and, you know, whether you have to wear masks at your desk versus not once you get in. And, you know, certainly a lot to adjust to. And I got to imagine for college students, it was probably even harder because, you know, I can remember that time. You're just so used to being around a lot of people all the time, mm-hmm. whether it's in class or back at your apartment or at a party or whatever. I mean, it's got to be a big adjustment for you guys for sure.
Definitely.
Yeah. How about you, Parker? Anything, you know, different than Catherine just said, or a lot of the same?
Yeah, I mean, obviously a lot of the same. I would say the one word that comes to mind that can probably describe most experiences, not just school, but weird. Yeah. It's just been all around a weird semester. And I mean, you hear that from the professors too, which have been in the college scene longer than ourselves. They've been a lot of times teaching for a couple decades, and a lot of them have said this is the weirdest semester they've ever had in their lives. So it's all around. I think it's been an adjustment not only for us but for the school. So it's been weird, like grading wise, and like how they're going to run exams and like group projects. So it's kind of been a first time experience for everyone. Everyone's figuring it out together. But to that, I'd kind of say like I'm just really thankful that I'm a senior, just because I feel like I've already kind of established like my core friends. Like I live with some of my best friends in an off-campus apartment, but just from everything I've seen, a lot of people just aren't as lucky. Like if you're a freshman or sophomore, where I feel like I did the majority of my own personal growth and professional growth, a lot of those kids aren't getting the same experience as I did. So I know it's been tough for a lot of people, myself included, and in some different situations, but yeah, just like everyone, a lot of sitting inside. I would say one of the things I found this semester is like, I really have to force myself to get outside and start the day off right. So with one of my roommates, I run down by the Schuylkill Trail in Philly right. almost every morning. And it's something that mentally I feel like I have to do to get myself motivated to do a lot of this online work. So that's something I've been doing.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think everybody has had to adjust their routines a little bit and make sure that they get that exposure outdoors. I mean, for me, it's walking the dogs. We have three dogs. They've never been walked as much in their life as the last 8 or 9 months. I mean, it's just unbelievable. They've gone from like one walk a day and otherwise just being let out in the yard to like 2 to 3 walks a day and yard time. So they're it's the best time of their lives for sure. They don't care.
Yeah, definitely. They probably, I think if anyone's benefited from this pandemic, it's been animals.
Yeah.
They're getting all the walks these days. So,
yep. Yeah. But a lot of the shelters cleared out of rescues as well, too.
Yeah, definitely.
People adopting dogs left and right. So, yeah, look, I mean, you got to look at the positives. It's not all bad. I know for myself, you know, in addition to just the adjustment on a day-to-day basis, it's looking at a lot of my priorities and getting into other interests like this podcast. I don't think I would have started this if not for the pandemic. I just wouldn't have had that time to kind of sit back and reflect and figure out what I want to do. You know, whereas before I'd just be running around to meetings and lunches and dinners and work and happy hours. It's just, you know, it would not have gotten done without the pandemic. So there are good things that come out of this.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. How about you, Kaylee? Anything on the Drexel side, since we already talked to these Temple kids here, you know, we might as well, get your perspective from Drexel.
It's been, I would say it's a bit different just because Drexel has like the year round schooling system. So for me, I'm a fall winter co-op. So that means I do my co-op from September through March. And so right when I was finishing up my co-op is when the lockdown order went into place. So started classes right then. I was one of the first people doing a completely new term online. And since this is like my third term of classes online now, and it's been strange. The first two terms, I feel like I kind of got comfortable, even though I was home and with my parents, wasn't, you know, leaving the house a lot, kind of like what everyone else was saying, and was doing my work. But like you used to, you know, always do schoolwork at a certain time, or you'd always do work like, you know, 9 to 5. And then I realized that like the boundaries had kind of been stretched because you're just home. So, but it worked because I was home and I wasn't doing anything. So I was like, oh, okay, I can spend, you know, 12 hours doing work all day. But now this term, I've been lucky, a lot lucky than other people. I've been able to be on campus again. And a lot of my friends also have on campus housing as well. So I've been able to see, you know, a bit more people, but it's still, now it's like readjusting because I'm like, oh, like now I have whatever social life you can have with, you know, your three friends that you're being COVID safe with. But now I'm like, having to relearn like, oh, I need to do my work during this time so that I can spend time with my friends at this time. And oh, I can't hang out with my friends at this time so that I can do my work right now. Kind of like being a freshman again when you don't know where to stop the social hangout and when to actually do your homework. And so it's been challenging, but like Parker said, I think I'm very lucky to be a senior and to already have like a set group of friends and to have developed already at this point, because I have, you know, my younger sister who is, you know, a sophomore. Her experience has been a lot tougher, I would say. So yeah,
I could definitely relate to that in terms of, you know, when I was a senior, I was working, I'd done an internship my junior year with KPMG, and they were, you know, gracious enough to let me stay on a part-time basis through my senior year. So I could get some more experience, make some money. You know, I lived in Ardmore, so I could get on the train and go right into Center City in, you know, 25 minutes. And, you know, I did that 2 or 3 days a week, you know, picked up about 10 hours a week with them. And I had another job on campus too, in addition to school and in addition to, you know, your friends in senior year. In most schools, you kind of live all over the place. You don't really, you know, junior year, we all lived on the on-campus apartment. Senior year, we all moved off. And once you're kind of off and separated from people to some degree, at least for me, I was kind of ready to go. I was like, all right, you know, I want to finish school. I want to get started working. And I could see myself as a freshman or a sophomore definitely having a much harder time with a situation like this, where you're so used to congregating with many more of your friends in one place, and now you can't really do that anymore.
Yeah.
So good thing you guys are seniors. But anyway, all right, why don't we get to it? Let's get to the questions. You know, how this went down was that Catherine, Parker, and Kaylee all reached out to their different student organizations that they're with and pull the list of, I think we have about 12 questions or so. And, you know, we'll get to as many of them as we can. And if I talk too long on each answer, then I will reach out directly to the people that ask the questions and send them an email and try to connect with them that way. So let's start firing away.
All right. I think I'll start us off. So our first question is, when entering the workforce and starting out a new company virtually, how do you gauge and get acclimated to a company's culture?
So in normal times, it's not that hard. I mean, you show up and, you know, they'll probably take you out to lunch and you'll meet a bunch of people and, you know, it's kind of more of a natural process. In today's world, I think the onus is a lot more on the employee themselves to reach out to as many people as they can at the company. You know, you're going to have Zoom calls and you're going to have group discussions and, you know, you're going to get a feel for people. But I think the individual reach out is going to be key, separate of that, to take the initiative to get to know people as well as you can virtually on a one-on-one basis. And that way you can kind of get a sense for who the people are, you know, what they're like, what they enjoy separate of work. And, you know, also even a little bit of, you know, call it company gossip might come your way too, where you can get a sense of, you know, hey, who are the really valued leaders in the organization? You know, who are some people that maybe you want to just sort of deal with in a business setting and not go much past that? You know, just kind of that, that information that is easier to get in a, you know, in-room setting that has to be done virtually now. So that would be my advice. Do as much one-on-one reach out as you can.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's I guess our second question is, has COVID shifted the levels of popularity within certain areas, meaning like people looking for more suburban versus urban properties? And if so, which areas specifically have become the most popular? And furthermore, you need to reallocate staff to different territories if there was a significant increase within a certain region?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So first of all, I can't say that we've seen a solid trend from like center city into the suburbs since COVID has happened. But we have seen companies looking that might be saying, hey, you know, it's time for us to either get out of the city or reduce our footprint in the city and, you know, build our footprint in the suburbs. I mean, a lot of companies that we work with, including ourselves, JLL, we have a center city office at 1650 Arch Street. And then we have suburban offices in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, Berwyn, PA, Wilmington, Delaware, and up in the Lehigh Valley. Us, as an example, we started reopening offices. The first one was late May in Wilmington, got that one open. We took care of Cherry Hill and Berwyn in mid-June and Lehigh Valley as well. And then we opened Center City, Philadelphia in the first week of July. Well, as of a couple weeks ago with the mayor's orders, we had to close our Philadelphia office. So now what we've done there is used our Berwyn office and our Cherry Hill office to compensate some overflow for people that had gone in the office, but then are not able to kind of re-enter. So that is an example of us having to use kind of our suburban locations to accommodate for what's, you know, being negatively impacted in Center City. Now, in terms of a long-term trend, you know, it's a little too soon to say, but we're still very bullish on how Center City Philadelphia shakes out in all this. You know, we think that the appetite for young people is still to stay in the city. We've seen some flight of, you know, call it early 30s to early 40s, either people with young families or just starting families that have decided to get out and go to the suburbs. But, you know, research indicates so far that we think the backfill of younger people staying are going to keep that strong. So, you know, we're seeing still a lot of deals go down in the multifamily space for apartment buildings, and the demand is still there. So, you know, really, end of the day, overall answer to that question is it's a little too soon to tell. We see a little bit of indication of movement out to the suburbs, but, you know, we still feel really good about Center City as a whole.
Yeah, I thought that it was going to be that the city was like, this was the end of it. So,
right. Yeah, yeah, I mean, look, we need the city. The whole area needs the city. It's the heartbeat of the whole region. So it can't go away. You can't have Philadelphia fall apart and then like, oh, all these other suburban centers are just going to pop up and take its place. It doesn't really work like that. You know, we still need this area to be able to congregate and to, you know, live, work, play, learn, as they say in Philadelphia. You know, having said that, there could be opportunity in certain suburban areas to grow, but it can't be at the full expense of Center City, Philadelphia. Now, people in New York might be saying different things right now. We've actually seen an influx of New Yorkers into Center City, Philadelphia. So people that have decided, you know, Manhattan or Brooklyn or wherever is not the place for them anymore, that have come down to Center City, Philadelphia, because they almost look at that as a suburb in a way. You know, they say it's still a city, but it's not nearly as, you know, super densely populated, and the cost of living is a little bit better, and, you know, great restaurants and all those factors. So still feel good about it. I think late next year is when you're really going to see what is the impact, how big is it, and, you know, what's the next 3 years look like.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you. And then, what do you believe are qualities that you must have to be successful both in the industry and as a professional in general?
So, I mean, it's really the same for any industry, whether it's real estate or anything else. I think first and foremost, hard work and reliability are the two most important things, you know. We had like a JLL symposium thing a couple years ago. I think it was with our finance leads, which at the time I was running finance. That was, you know, it was a book about what's more important, talent or experience / work ethic. And the book claimed that talent was more important, and it gave all these reasons why. I disagree with that. I really think, you know, there are people with immense talent. You know, the Mark Cubans of the world, Steve Jobs, Elon Musk, those are so few and far between. Most of us are not at that level, you know. We only have so much capability in our brains to be great. But what sets apart the people at, you know, under that level is, I think, work ethic. I think their ability to grind and come to work every day and be curious and to want to improve themselves. To me, that's really the key. And I think, you know, really work ethic and an honest, ongoing self-analysis on, you know, what are your values? How are you performing? What can you do better? Are you in the right industry? Do you need to go try something else? You know, those are, you know, if I can count on somebody, I want to be around that person. You know, if I can count on them, and if they can relate to other people, you know, that's a huge thing too. Be a really good team member. If you're somebody that doesn't get along with everybody or, you know, you have a personality that is sort of bristly to other people, that's a tough thing to work around. You know, so if you can get along with people and work hard, you know, in almost any industry you're in, you're going to have good prospects of being really successful.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you.
All right. So sure. I will be asking the next set of questions. This one is from Jack Ranieri. He's a management information system senior. So he asks, what kind of advice do you have for a college student who would want to be in your position one day?
Yeah, I think, like I just said, hard work first and foremost. And be opportunistic, and not in terms of, you know, taking advantage of a situation to benefit yourself. But when you see an opportunity, go for it, even if it's not something that's laid directly in front of you. And I'll give an example of, you know, kind of how I got into this particular position I'm in right now as COO for the Philadelphia region. You know, my former boss was leaving the company in March of 2017, and it was a surprise. He was leaving for a competitor. When you do that in our industry, there's no 2-week notice and transition plan. It's you're gone that day. You know, you come in and you announce your resignation. You have to leave, you know, within hours. Hand in your computer. See you later. Yeah, that's it. So we were, as a leadership group locally, and I was kind of the number two operational guy, but there were some other service line leads that were, you know, maybe more impactful than I was to the organization at that point. And I got with our biggest service line lead, and we developed a plan to present to JLL on how we felt we could carry forward. And that was an enhancement of my role and kind of an edit of my former boss's role, and kind of set up this player coach slash COO business model. And I spent 3 days working until, you know, 1-2 o'clock in the morning on writing this plan and actually creating two new roles that didn't totally exist within the company before. And we pitched it to the guy that who's since left JLL that ran the East region, a guy named Dave McGarry, wonderful guy. We pitched it to him and said, "Hey, Dave, this is what we think works. What do you think?" And almost on the spot, he said yes. He basically said, "I really like it. Let me go pitch it to the people I got to pitch it to." And I would say within a couple weeks, it was done. And I created my own job. Granted, not out of thin air. There's a few people that I sort of modeled it around in the country for JLL. But I saw an opportunity. I said, you know what? I'm not going to sit back and wait for them to ask me if I want the role that my boss is vacating, or just wait for them to go hire somebody else. Let's make this happen. You know, we got after it and we created it, and lucky enough, they saw our vision.
Wow. That's really impressive. And you definitely deserve that. So,
yeah, I mean, no, I appreciate that. But I think it speaks to the fact that, you know, there are times to be patient in your career and there are times to kind of
definitely
grab the bull by the horns, you know? And that particular time for me was like, you know, time to go do this, you know? Don't sit back and be the super humble guy that I was for a long time. It's like, go show them what it is I believe this thing can be. And, you know, yeah, worked out.
I agree. Thank you. So the next question comes from David Sadek from South Philly. So he says, as the COO of a commercial real estate company, what do you envision the future of the corporate workplace to look like? Do you expect certain companies to require their employees back to the office after the pandemic? If not, do you think commercial office spaces will be repurposed?
David from South Philly, is a wonderful question, my friend. And I guess I would say, again, it's a little early to make a call on that, but I would say what we're seeing from our research and our surveys of our customers is, number one, people want to come back. That's without a doubt. I mean, I think we did a survey where about 70% of our clients said they either want to come back full time or like a 3-day week with some flexibility to work from home. So the strong response was that flexibility. I think this time has taught us that we can be flexible as professionals. You know, we don't necessarily have to be in the office 8 to 10 hours a day, 5 days a week. We can have a little balance between the work from home and the work in the office. So there'll be a change. I think what we're going to see is that I don't think a whole lot of companies are going to go fully remote. I just don't think that's good for culture. You know, you even see big companies like Facebook. They sent all their people home for a long time. I don't think they're back yet. I don't think they'll be back until the middle of next year. But at the same time, they bought a campus in Northern California, like a whole giant campus that was like, forget what it was, 500,000 square feet or something like that. So that's them saying, yes, for the time being, we got to be safe and go home. But in the long run, we're bringing everybody back together, you know? I think flexibility is the name of the game. I think there's going to be some different office designs than you've seen previously. I started with JLL in 2010, and I worked on a global account for Ally Financial. They had about 300 some locations around the world at that time. And that was coming out of the Great Recession. And the name of the game was downsize, you know, utilization, meaning less square feet per employee, essentially pack more people into a smaller space. And that was kind of across a lot of industries, especially financial services. But then the next 2 to 3 years, you saw a change from that. That was back to more comfortable spaces and maybe even some more offices and less bench seating and, you know, still encouraging collaboration, but making it more comfortable for people to come to work. It's important to feel that when you go to work. You know, nobody wants to be packed into the you know, bench seating right next to, you know, you could move your elbow out 6 inches and you touch the person next to you. Like, I don't know about you guys, but to me, that doesn't sound very fun.
Yeah. Nope.
I'm not saying I need a 300 square foot private office, but I would like some level of comfort and space and privacy where I'm sitting. So I think you'll see, the question is, what is the net in terms of square footage impact between some people that go remote full time, some people that go to more of a hoteling situation where they come in a couple days a week and reserve a desk, versus people that want more space in the office, that want private offices for safety and cleanliness and comfort. So there's going to be a net impact there. I don't know if that means people need more space, the same amount of space, or less space. So we'll yeah, find out.
I can see a lot. I know for me, my internship, I was thankful that I still had it, but I do wish that I got that company feel and would be able to go into the office and such. And my managers were telling me that the office life is so much better, and because you get to talk to people in person while you're on a break, or if you need to go ask them a question, you can just have that face-to-face contact. And so I know that they definitely miss the in-person kind of vibe. So
yeah, definitely. I mean, we were on a Zoom call a couple weeks ago with our suburban leasing team, and one of the people said, like, I didn't realize how much we collaborated until this happened. You know, how many of those passing conversations you'll have with another broker at their desk or in the hallway or in a conference room, and you find a way to put a deal together. You know, maybe the one broker represents an owner and they're looking, you know, they have a vacancy coming up they didn't expect, and the other broker is representing a tenant that's like, we're looking in the market and we can't find what we're looking for in this realm. And it's a passing comment that leads to a deal, you know, and that, along with the social end of it, is something that everybody greatly misses right now.
Yeah.
So it's coming back. It's definitely coming back. When it comes back exactly and how it looks when it comes back is what we're all trying to figure out.
Thank you. So then my last question before I hand it off to Parker is from Carly Krzywicki from Philly. She asks, did you expect to be in the position that you are in now when you first started your career / were pursuing a college?
You know what? I didn't have any idea what to expect back then. I thought I'd be really successful, but I didn't know when or how or what industry it may be in. I had no idea what I wanted to do at that age. And I majored in accounting. I went to work for KPMG. But there was nothing in my mind that was saying, I'm going to be a lifelong accountant. You know, I didn't know what I wanted to be. And it took a lot of twists and turns to get where I am today. And it didn't kind of come clearly into focus until probably about 5 or 6 years ago. And then I had a very clear vision of what I wanted to do in this business. You know, I wanted to be in front in terms of strategy, in terms of planning, recruiting, and still, you know, being closely tied to the financials, which, you know, looking back on it, I'm really glad I went that way first. I'm glad I built the kind of the base of finance and accounting. I hated my dad for like 10 years for making me do that. because he was the one that, you know, suggested I do it. And I think he just didn't want me to wind up on his couch at 26, you know, without a job. So he figured just push me into the industry that he knew to be the most likely to employ me. So, you know, it took a long time, but
yeah, I guess I definitely know a lot of college students who aren't sure where they want to head into, like company-wise or industry-wise. I guess kind of like a follow-up, do you have any advice for those kinds of students, how they should look for jobs?
It's tough. I mean, I think the best thing you can do is work through your network. You know, the people you know, the people you trust and like, you know, find out what they're doing. And, you know, don't be afraid to reach out to them and say, hey, you know, I'm not really sure what I want to do. You know, here's what my education is based in. Maybe I have some ideas, but you know, find out what they're doing and see if it sounds interesting. I mean, the best you can do is hear from those people you know directly. And then subsequent to that, they're the best people to plug you into opportunities. It's hard to apply cold for positions and even get an interview, let alone get hired. You know, if you know people in the industry, in the company, they can help you with that process and they can vouch for you as a person, which is huge. I know when I'm interviewing somebody, if I have somebody, if it came in as a referral through somebody I know and they know that person directly, then I'm always apt to put them at the front of the line, you know, to at least talk to them in an interview setting and then, you know, figure out if they're the right person. So, you know, use your network. It's a great tool.
All right. Awesome. I'll try to ring it in with three final questions. So this first one is from actually a good buddy of mine, Joshua Kay, who's a senior at Temple University. And he was pretty excited when he heard that I was hopping on this podcast with you, Tony, because he's actually been, for the most part through college, pretty interested in real estate. And since the beginning of 2020, he's been working with Berkshire Hathaway as a real estate agent in the city of Philly. So he was curious if you can answer this question, which is, how will COVID impact the commercial real estate in major cities? So kind of similar to the David Sadek question, but he also tailed on at the end, will large commercial buildings convert into residential buildings?
That's a great question from Joshua, and glad to hear that he's in the business and interested in the business. You know, it sounds like from what he's doing, he probably went and got licensed while he was in college, which is an awesome thing to do. I did speak about this already in some detail, but I would say that question in particular on converting large office buildings into multifamily apartments, condos, that has definitely come up many times. There was already a trend in that to some degree. And a lot of new buildings that you see go up are a mix of ground floor retail, office, and then apartments, you know, kind of up above. So I think we'll continue to see that. I don't see a massive conversion from office buildings into apartments because I just don't know if that demand is there to do, you know, that big of an undertaking on that front. You know, not in Philadelphia, because there's still been a lot of new development on, you know, multifamily only properties during this whole time. So I think to some degree you'll see it. And certainly in any new projects, I think you're usually going to see a mix of more than one use. But, you know, I could be wrong, but I don't see a massive conversion coming in that area.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. I'll move along to the next question, which is from Satish Krishnaraj, who's a junior at Temple University from New Jersey, actually. So nice. He was curious for college students who want to become future leaders within the business world specifically, what are the most important qualities to focus on developing?
I mean, I think first things first is build your base. You know, everybody would love to come out and be a leader within a couple years of graduating, but you know, reality is it takes longer than that. You know, it takes, you know, building the base of knowledge and expertise in whatever you're going into and really becoming a technical expert. And then I think you need at least, you know, 4 or 5 years of that before you can graduate into some sort of management capacity where you're overseeing people. You know, for me, I think it took about, it's probably a little faster than it is for most people. So within about 3 or 4 years, I was managing 2 people. But I look back and I was not ready to do that at that point. I mean, I was, you know, I was 25 and I did okay. And one of my direct reports was 22, 23. So there was sort of that, I don't know, I guess that natural, I had a couple of years experience and that person knew that and was able to trust me. And we got along well personally. But one of my direct reports was, I think, in her mid-30s. And that was a major challenge to, you know, manage somebody that had been in the industry, you know, 12, 13 years, where I was in like about 3, you know. And that's, it just comes with time. It comes with experience and it comes with being able to relate to people as best you can. So I would say number one, work on the technical end of things. Number two, you know, be reliable and as likable as possible. And then as time goes on, just, you know, I think one of the main qualities is, you know, being confident in yourself that you are, you know, educated and experienced enough to make good decisions and, you know, and communicate too. I mean, that's a huge part of it is the ability to communicate in a written sense, in a verbal sense, over Zoom, in person, whatever it is, you know, you have to be able to communicate clearly and effectively and understand your audience. So that's probably the best advice I could give there.
Yeah, that makes sense. I believe that's pretty good advice. I know for myself, the confidence is a big thing that I try to work on because like when interviewing for jobs and stuff, if you aren't confident in yourself, then I guess why should an employer be confident in you? So it's not always the easiest thing, but I think it's so crucial that myself as well as my peers work on that. So the last question I have is from another junior at Temple University, Stephen Konovich. And he asked, as a college student, talking about himself, approaching graduation at what feels like an increasingly rapid rate with COVID, what questions should my peers and I ask ourselves before making our decision as to which role, company, or opportunity to pursue?
Yeah, that's a great question there. You know, I think the question you have to ask yourself is, you know, number one, am I going into something that I feel passionate about? You know, and that's maybe more in terms of the industry than the company itself or the role itself. You know, do I see myself enjoying this kind of work in this kind of business? If you can answer yes to that question, that's a lot of the kind of the battle right there. You know, if that answer is yes, and you know, you like the people you're interviewing with and speaking with, I think you go for it. You know, it's probably not advisable to overthink it, you know, because when you're just coming out, you just don't know where the next 10, 15 years are going to go. I mean, I'm a perfect example of that. I started in Big Four public accounting, and then I went to an entrepreneurial thing with a family friend that was opening a restaurant. I did that for a couple years. I went to, you know, consulting, and then I found my way into real estate on the ownership side, and then a couple more twists and turns from there to figure out where I am today. And, you know, one of the best things that happened to me really was a mistake I made in, I've had two different stints with JLL. I left JLL after my first 3 years to explore another option out of the real estate industry. And what I didn't realize at the time was, or I didn't fully, maybe I wasn't fully honest with myself, was that I really loved the industry. And to leave that industry, even with a job that sounded like it could be really interesting and lucrative and more money and all that, was a huge mistake. Because within the first week of that job, I wanted to get back to JLL. I wanted to get back in the commercial real estate industry. And, you know, you really, at some point, you really have to listen to your heart. And, you know, I hate to say, like, you know, give you the whole follow your dreams thing, because I used to get mad when people would tell me that, because I'm like, I don't even know what my dreams are, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what I love yet. I don't know. My dream is to be a professional baseball player, and I wasn't good enough to play after my freshman year of college. So, you know, what am I going to do now? But I think it is important to really pursue what you like and what you think can be a kind of a growth opportunity for you in the long run. And it's okay if you get that wrong on the first time coming out of school, because you're going to have plenty of opportunities to fix that, you know? So do your best to figure out what you like. Make sure you're somewhat comfortable with the company and the people you'd be working with. If you can figure out that through the interview process, and then just go. And once you're in that, I would say, don't try not to get too impatient, you know, cause it's easy to come out of school and kind of panic a little bit with your first thing and say, oh my gosh, you know, this isn't the right thing. I hate it. My next 30 years in my career are going to be miserable. It's not going to be that. Even if it's not the ideal thing, stick it out for a while and have your eyes open for other opportunities.
Yeah, that's great. I agree with that. That's all the questions I have for you, Tony. Thank you.
Thank you guys. This is, kind of tired now. Usually on these podcasts, I mostly just let the guests talk and fill in where I can. I'm going to need a nap after this.
Yeah, we've been grilling you for a while now.
I know. Well, I hope everybody is satisfied with the answers. And like I said, if there are more questions out there that we didn't get to, send me the person's contact information and I'll reach out to them. But listen, I think the three of you, Catherine, Kaylee, and Parker are really awesome people. And, you guys have a ton going for you. I would say you're well ahead of me than when I was your age coming out of school. I didn't go to as many kind of extracurricular or community service oriented things as you guys attend, and all your extra, group stuff and student organizations. That stuff is really great. And, I'm proud of you guys for doing that. And it certainly shows a lot of maturity and, interest in bettering yourselves and the people around you. So I think you're all really poised for a ton of success.
Yeah, thank you. We hope at least.
Well, again, guys, really appreciate your time today. Catherine Rowe, Parker Strong, Kaylee McGrath, yes, also known as Kaylee McDermott from time to time. Really appreciate you guys today. Have an awesome rest of the week. And thanks for being on season one, episode 9 of the No Code Podcast. All right, guys. Take care. Thanks for listening, everyone.